Peter Whimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter. The Five Red Herrings by Dorothy L. Sayers. Adapted in 8 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 6, Evidence of a Commercial Traveller. Lord Peter Whimsey is working with the local police forces in their investigation of the murder of Sandy Campbell, an unpopular Galloway artist. All 6 suspects, fellow painters who'd recently quarrelled with Campbell, have now produced alibis, mostly rather unconvincing. Whimsey and Sergeant D.L. of Newton Stewart Police decide to report progress to Sir Maxwell Jimmison, the Chief Constable.
Well now, Sir Maxwell, first I would like to run through what we know of the movements of the murderer, proceeding by and by to the alibis of the 6 suspects.
Good idea, Sergeant. Oh, do smoke, Whimsey.
Yeah, thank you, Chief.
Now then, Campbell was last seen alive by a wee lassie called Helen McGregor at 9:45 p.m. last Monday night. That's a week ago today, sir. He was fighting with another man on the main Kirkcudbright to Gatehouse Road, and either in this fight, or possibly at some later stage in the evening, he was killed. The murderer seems to have decided quickly to fake an accident, and accordingly spent the night in Campbell's cottage, ate Campbell's breakfast, and then early in the morning went up to the Minnoch dressed in Campbell's hat and cloak, sat down and painted a picture in Campbell's style. Mm-hmm. A wee bit after 11 o'clock, he tumbled Campbell's body into the burn below, leaped onto a bicycle that he'd stolen the night before from the Anworth Hotel. It was positively identified by Scotland Yard last night, my lord. And he then bicycled to Girvan, where he took the 1:11 train to Ayr. At Ayr, he labelled the bicycle for Euston in order to lose it, and himself disappeared. And that is all we know about the crime, sir.
Very good, Sergeant. Then what about these alibis?
Aye. Now, let us consider first Mr. Gowan. Mr. Gowan's butler, Alcock, told Inspector Macpherson that the gentleman left Kirkcudbright for London at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, and has been there ever since.
Well, that lets him out completely.
Aye, it would, sir. Except that we know Alcock is lying. Mm-hmm. Mr. Gowan was seen on the top floor of his house on Wednesday morning by the housemaid Betty, and he'd shaved off his beard.
That splendid beard? Whatever for?
Well, sir, we found tufts of black hair at the place on the main road where Campbell had his fight. And Inspector Macpherson's theory, Sir Maxwell, is that it was Gowan who murdered Campbell in the fight. He then cut off his beard on the spot to avoid being recognised as he went about the business of faking the accident.
Well, has Gowan been tracked down in London yet?
Inspector Macpherson interviewed him yesterday afternoon, sir. And the inspector should have got back early this morning.
Splendid. I dare say he'll have a tale to tell. Well, let's move on, then. Who has the next alibi?
Mr. Waters, sir. Though he's only covered for the Tuesday morning. Now, he claims he was sailing all last week with an old friend and says he went aboard down at the Doon before 9:30 on Tuesday. Unfortunately for him, we haven't been able to contact this old friend.
Worse than that, in fact, Chief. He says he left his bicycle in a shed down at the Doon, but it seems to have disappeared. Either it's been pinched, or it never was there in the first place.
Well, that'll sort itself out when the friend's found, I expect. Next?
Mr. Ferguson, Sir Maxwell. Campbell's next-door neighbour in Gatehouse. No alibi for Monday night, but on Tuesday morning he went to Glasgow via Dumfries.
Was he seen?
Aye, boarding the train at Gatehouse. And his ticket was correctly punched all the way to St. Enoch Station, Glasgow.
Well, that sounds highly satisfactory. Who have we left out of your 6 suspects? Now, what about Jock Graham?
Sir Maxwell, on Saturday afternoon, a lady called Mrs. Smith LeMessurier...
Oh, that woman.
Aye. She came into my station and told me, tears in her eyes, that Jock Graham had... how could she bring herself to admit it? Had spent all Monday night with her.
Did she, by Jove? What about Tuesday morning?
That was the strange thing, sir. She seemed to think an alibi for Monday night would be sufficient.
Very interesting. Righto, who's left now? Just Henry Strachan and Hugh Farren, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, Chief. And they're best taken together. May I tell you about them?
Yeah, by all means, Lindsay. Yeah,
thank you. Well, I tracked Farren down on Saturday afternoon in Westmoreland. He'd run away from here, and he said he had no idea that Campbell had been murdered.
Could he give himself an alibi, though?
Not one that means anything. He was last seen at about 9:15 on Monday night, very drunk and angry with Campbell, going up the road towards Strachan's house. He says he left a note for Strachan saying that he was going to kill Campbell and then do away with himself.
Well, Strachan never told the police about that, did he?
No, said Maxwell. He was protecting his friend, you see.
Yes. Carry on, Whimsy.
Well, having failed to find Campbell, Farren wandered up towards the old lead mines near Fall Bay. Here, Strachan eventually found him. Apparently, they had a fight, which ended when Farren ran away. And the next thing Farren remembers is waking up the next morning and walking to New Brigadier, from where he proceeded by means of lifts to Westmoreland.
And Strachan?
Well, he didn't appear until after lunch on Tuesday. Yeah, there's no knowing where he may have been.
Or what he may have been up to. Has he been interviewed since Saturday, dear?
No, sir.
Then maybe I'll pay a visit to Mr. Strachan. I must admit I shall be very interested to see whether he tells the same story as Farren. And I shall be even more interested to know what he was doing on Tuesday morning. Mr. Strachan, we've obtained a statement from Mr. Farren with reference to his movements on Monday night and Tuesday morning, which requires your corroboration.
Indeed. And what does Farren say that you'd like me to corroborate?
Yes, I'm afraid that won't do. It will be better, I think, if you give me an account of your own movements, starting, about 9 o'clock on Monday evening.
Very well. At 9 o'clock, I was fishing up at Tongland.
Did you see anybody there?
I don't know that I did.
And when did you leave?
Round about 11 o'clock. The fish seemed to have lost enthusiasm, and so did I.
And then?
Then I went home like a good boy. I got home round about midnight.
What then?
I went out again in the car.
Why?
To look for Farren.
What made you do that?
I found a note from him waiting for me.
What was in the note?
He told me that he was going to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. Did the note say nothing else?
No.
Mr. Strachan, we know the contents of the note. It would be altogether better if you told me the truth. Come along now. Mr. Farren has given us an account of himself. You no longer have any reason for reticence. What else did he say in the note?
He mentioned Campbell.
Yes.
He said he was going to kill him. I didn't take that in the least bit seriously, of course. It was clear from his writing that Farren was hopelessly drunk.
Indeed. Where did you go when you went out?
I went to Campbell's cottage, as it happens.
To see if Farren was there?
Yes.
So you did take his threat seriously?
No, not at all. Well, not very seriously. It's simply that both Campbell and Farren are excitable men. And I thought there might be a great deal of unpleasantness if they met in that mood, and possibly a really nasty row.
Was there anybody at the cottage?
No. I knocked two or three times, and then as everything was dark, I went in. Everything was clean and tidy, and it didn't look as though Campbell had been in. He wasn't in bed, because I went upstairs to see. So I left a note for him on the table and came away again, relocking the door and putting the key back where I found it.
You left a note for him? What exactly did it say?
Oh, something like, Dear Campbell, I'm rather anxious about F. He's in a highly wrought-up state and is threatening to do you some injury. Be on your guard. It was something like that, and I signed it with my initials.
What happened next?
Well, Farren had occasionally talked about suicide, and the old mines up by Creetown seemed to have a kind of morbid fascination for him. So I drove up there. I left my car where the road ends, just beyond Fall Bay, and went along on foot, calling Farren as I went. When I got close to the old mines, I thought I saw something move, and shouted again. Then I saw there really was a man there. He ran away, and I followed him and caught hold of him. He said, What the hell do you want?
Was it Farren?
Yes, it was.
Well?
Well, I argued with him for some time and tried to persuade him to come home. He absolutely refused and started to move off again. I took him by the arm, but he struggled with me, and in the confusion he hit me in the face and knocked me down. By the time I'd scrambled up again, he had got away. I ran after him. Well, I suppose I wasn't looking where I was going, because I tripped over a bunch of stuff and found myself falling head first over the edge of the world, it seemed to me. I bumped and banged against what felt like balks of timber and finally brought up against something. I was completely knocked out, of course. When I eventually came to, several hours later, it was broad daylight and I was able to see where I was.
Down one of the old shafts, I suppose.
Yes. Lord, what a place. Well, I don't suppose it was more than 40 feet deep, but that looked quite enough to me. And it went sheer up like a chimney. It was narrow, fortunately, and by spread-eagling myself, I managed very slowly to hoist myself to the top. God, it was hard work. But I did it in the end.
What time do you think that was?
I couldn't be sure, because my watch had stopped. Quite late in the morning, I suppose. Anyway, the next thing was to find the car. I calculated that I must be nearly 2 miles from Fal Bay, and decided that if I followed the flow of the burn, I must be going in the right direction. So I set off downstream. After a time, I came in sight of the road and the car. It was just where I'd left it, and the dashboard clock made it 12:15. I had a beast of a time starting her up, but I managed it after about 1/4 hour, and eventually arrived back home at about 1:30.
I see. And what did you do when you got home?
Well, I rang up Farron's house at once, of course, to see if he was there. I hoped he might have come to his senses, you see, and gone quietly home. Well, he hadn't, as you know. So I told Mrs. Farron to say absolutely nothing to anybody, but that I would come over and see her after lunch, as I had something rather important to tell her.
And did you, in fact, go over to Kirkcudbright after lunch?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
Well, I was going to, of course. I went down to open the gate for the car when I saw one of the members coming down from the golf course. Just opposite my gate, he met the gatehouse policeman. They didn't see me because of the hedge. The constable said, "Is the provost up at the golf course? He's wanted. Mr. Campbell's been found lying dead at Newton Stewart." After that, they moved further up the road and I didn't hear any more, so I went back to the house to think about it.
What did you think about it?
I couldn't make up my mind.
That Farron had murdered Campbell, perhaps?
No. Well,
you went over and saw Mrs. Farron late that night, is that correct?
I did.
What did you say to her? That you expected a charge of murder to be preferred against Farron, and that she was to be very careful what she said to the police?
Isn't that one of those questions which you are not supposed to ask, nor I to answer?
Have it your own way, Mr. Strachan. You seem to be well acquainted with the law. You know, for example, that an accessory to murder after the fact is liable to the same punishment as the principal.
Certainly I do, Sir Maxwell. I also know that you are not allowed to use threats, overt or implicit, in interrogating a witness. Now, is there anything further I can do for you?
Nothing, thank you.
Mind if I watch you paint, Waters?
Yes, I do. Now, why can't you go fishing, Whimsy, or take the car out for a run? I can't paint properly with you snooping around all the time. It puts me off my stroke. How do you like me to sit around and watch you detecting?
You can watch me now. There's no charge.
Oh. Are you detecting now?
Like anything. If you could take the top of my head off, you would see the wheels whizzing round.
I see. You're not detecting me, I hope.
Yes, well, everybody hopes that.
And look here, Whimsy, you're not suggesting anything. I've told you all about my movements, and I suppose you believe me.
Well, of course. But it's a pity about your bicycle being pinched from the dune, ain't it? Rather spoiled your alibi, what?
Oh. I don't want to discuss this stupid business.
No, nor do I. Go on, Pete. Hello, Jock Graham's coming to see you.
I say, is Whimsy here? Sorry, Waters, but I must speak to Whimsy.
Carry on, Jock. I'm painting.
Whimsy, old man, I'm in the most ghastly hole. Mm-hmm. It's too awful. Have you heard about it? It's only just been sprung on me.
Go to, you have heard what you should not. Put on your nightgown, look not so pale. I tell you yet again, Campbell's dead. I cannot come out on's grave.
I wish he could.
Oh, horror, horror, horror. Where got'st thou that goose look?
Oh, do stop drivelling, Whimsy. Listen, you know that female at Newton Stewart, the Smith LeMessurier woman?
I've met her.
God, so have I. She got hold of me this morning.
Jock, Jock.
Do you know what she's done?
Of course. She's given you an alibi for the whole of Monday night.
A lady's reputation has been sacrificed on the altar of affection. But, dear boy, we don't blame you. We know that rather than compromise a noble woman, you would have gone to the scaffold with your lips locked in a chivalrous silence.
My dear Whimsy, don't say you ever thought for one moment that there was a word of truth in it.
Frankly, I never did. I've known you do many rash things, but I gave you credit for seeing through Mrs. Smith Le Measurer.
I should hope so. What on earth am I going to do?
Yeah, it's awkward. Short of admitting where you really were that night, there's nothing for it but to accept the sacrifice, and with the sacrifice, the lady. And I greatly fear the lady means matrimony.
Oh, for God's sake. Well, I shall go and make it right with the police, of course, but what's the good? She's telling everybody. Nobody will ever believe now that there wasn't something in it.
Ain't life difficult? It all shows how careful you should be to tell the police everything at the first possible moment.
I know, but I didn't want to get anybody into trouble. Well, you see, Whimsy, the fact is, I was out poaching with Jimmy Fleeming up at Bargrennan. I thought it would be good fun. We were netting the pool just below the fall.
Oh, were you? That's the Earl of Galloway's water.
Yes. We were out all Monday night, and I had more whiskey than was good for me, so I stayed up there on Tuesday, and we had another go on Tuesday night.
You are an ass, Graham. Why the hell didn't you come and tell me about it in the first place?
You'd have had to tell the police.
Oh, I know, but that could have been squared. Is Jimmy Fleeman prepared to give evidence now?
I haven't said anything to him. How could I? Well, dash it, I'm not such a swine as to go and ask him. I've no doubt he'd back me up, but I can't ask him to. It isn't done.
By the way, you're sure that he can answer for you on Tuesday as well as Monday night?
Oh, yes. But Jimmy and a pal of his were hanging around most of Tuesday morning off and on. Well, that doesn't matter a damn. The thing I want to get clear is the business about Monday night.
Yes, I know. But Tuesday morning is what's going to interest the police.
Good Lord, Whimsy, this rot about Campbell isn't serious, really.
That's what I say. We seem to be in the same boat, Graham. I'm supposed to have faked an alibi, too.
What is the evidence about the murder, if it is one? The only definite thing I've heard is that, according to the papers, it was done by an artist. Did the assassin leave his fingerprints behind in paint, or what?
Well, I can't tell you that, I'm afraid. But I don't mind saying this. The whole thing turns upon how quickly Campbell could have got that sketch done on Tuesday up at the Minnick. I wanted to take a painting party up there the other day to time them, but it was rained off. I say, look here, that's a thought. Let's do it now.
What?
Well, both you two have claimed to me that you can imitate Campbell's style. You do the same painting as he did, and I'll time you. Well, half a jiff, I'll run round to the police station and borrow the sketch for you to copy. It won't be quite the same thing, but it'll give us an idea. Won't be a mo. And here it is.
Ah, that's the subject, is it? That's very characteristic. Almost ultra-characteristic. Don't you think, Waters?
That's exactly what one expects from the Campbells of this world. The trick degenerates into a mannerism and they paint caricatures of their own style.
Yes. It's funny. The handling isn't altogether... How many people have seen this, Whimsy?
Only myself and the police so far. And the Procurator Fiscal, naturally.
Ah. Well, do you know, I should have said, if I didn't know what it was...
Well?
I should almost have thought I had done it myself. There's a slight flavour of pastiche about it. It's rather more cold and cobalty than Campbell's usual style. Looks as though he's been experimenting. There's a look of freedom about it somehow. Well, don't you think so, Waters?
No, oh, I don't know. I call that a thoroughly Campbellish piece of work. A poor Campbell, if you like, but full of Campbellisms. Anyway, chuck it here. If we've got to copy the beastly thing, we'd better start. Can you see all right there, Graham?
Yeah.
I'll put the paints on the table here. And please don't throw them on the floor in your usual dirty way.
I do not. I collect them neatly in my hat if I'm not wearing it, and if I am, I lay them handily in the grass. I'm not always fumbling about for them in a satchel like you.
What's wrong with my satchel? You don't expect me to go out like Farron with a sketching box or like Gowan with a combined box and picnic basket?
Oh, Gowan's pure swank with his partitions with each colour and his portable kettle. Do you remember the day I pinched it and filled all the partitions up with fish?
That was a good ride. He couldn't use the box for a week because of the fishy smell. He had to stop painting because it put him out to have his arrangements upset. Right.
I'm ready to start. Ah, you're standing by with your stopwatch, Whimsy?
I am. Both ready? Good. Now then. One, two, three, go. Graham, 1 hour, 40 minutes. Waters, 1 hour, 55.
And what precisely does that prove, my lord?
It proves nothing, D.L. But if, as we have been supposing up now, our murderer left the Minnock at 11:10 in order to catch his train, it means he probably started painting between 9:15 and 9:30.
Oh, here, my lord. Did I no tell you about the man who saw Campbell's car going up to the Minnock on Tuesday morning?
No, what about him?
He came in while you were away. He says a car with a man wearing a big hat and cloak passed the New Galloway turning on the road between Creetown and Newton Stewart at 9:55 that morning.
9:55?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that rate, he wouldn't be up at the Minnock much before 10:00.
No, my lord.
So allowing an absolute minimum of an hour and a half for painting, he couldn't have left the Minnock until 11:30. He'd have to be quite a cyclist, wouldn't he, to get to Girton by 1:07?
Aye, my lord, it's 21 miles.
Yes. Yes, this will need thinking about. Anything else come up today? How did the chief get on with Strachan?
Oh, very well. There was a wee bit of new information that was very interesting. It appears Mr. Strachan went round to Campbell's cottage after midnight on Monday and went in and found no one there.
Really?
Aye. And Sir Maxwell was wondering if Gowan killed Campbell at 9:45 on the main road, what did he then do with the body? Up to now, we've been supposing he took it straight to Campbell's cottage.
Now, wait a moment, Sergeant. Not straight there.
Hmm?
The first thing Inspector McPherson's theory says Gowan did was to put the body in his own car and park it up a side lane. Then he drove Campbell's car to Gatehouse, probably stole the bicycle from the Anworth Hotel, and if so, rode back to the scene of the murder, if not walked, and only then returned to Campbell's cottage in his own car with the body. Couldn't that have taken over 2 hours?
If he walked, my lord, aye.
Yes. But there's still the problem of the third car, which little Helen heard tear in towards Kirkcudbright about 15 minutes later. Who was that? Where is Inspector McPherson, by the way? I thought he was back.
Ah, he should be, my lord. I dare say he's somewhere about the station.
Well, then I shall go and find him, Sergeant. I want to know what fun and games Gowan really did get up to that night.
Well, my lord, the first part of Gowan's story confirmed everything we were told by young Helen McGregor. On one evening, he'd been fishing up on the fleet and was driving back from Gatehouse to Kirkcudbright at about 9:45 when he came across Campbell's car standing in the middle of the road, exactly at the point described by wee Helen, my lord. Campbell was undoubtedly drunk and spoiling for a fight, he says, so to protect himself, he picked up a heavy King Dick spanner that was beside him in the pocket of the car.
Would he have been wearing driving gloves by any chance?
Aye, my lord.
Oh, well, that explains the absence of any fingerprints but Campbell's, don't it? Yeah, go on, McPherson.
Well, my lord, according to Gowan, he did not use the spanner until Campbell aimed a blow at him. And he did. Caught him glancingly on the cheekbone. You remember the contusion there, my lord?
Certainly.
At once he jumped out of his car. And he does not deny that he and Campbell fought for several minutes in the middle of the road. However, from that point onwards, my lord, his account does not agree with wee Helen's.
In what way?
According to Gowan, my lord, it was Campbell who quickly proved the stronger of the two. He was soon sitting on Gowan's chest. And when he had him totally overpowered, he took from his pocket a pair of nail scissors and cut off not just Gowan's beard, but his hair, his eyebrows, everything. And then he knocked him out.
Sir Gowan was shaved by Campbell. Oh, well, that makes more sense than that he did it himself, certainly.
If you believe it, my lord.
What next, then? It was presumably Gowan's unconscious body that was put into his car and parked up the side lane. By Campbell. Is that correct?
So he claims, my lord.
After which, Campbell, still very much alive, continues home, arriving, according to Ferguson, shortly after 10:00.
Aye.
Well, it doesn't get us any further forward as to when Campbell was murdered. But it does tell us one thing that we didn't know, Inspector. Who was driving the so-called third car back to Kukubri? Clearly that was Gowan, awakened from his reverie, scooting home to avoid being seen, looking like a skinned rabbit.
Aye, my lord.
You don't sound very convinced. Now, well, never mind. Assuming Mr. Gowan's story is true, there is still one big question that remains to be answered. The one posed by the chief. If Campbell got home safely, where was he when Strachan paid his midnight call?
Inspector, my lord, I wish you'd come out here. There's a wee man just come in. A motorist who says he passed your bicyclist on the way to Girvan last Tuesday. Well, could you come and hear his story?
Yes, of course. Lead on, D.L.
He's in here. Mr. Clarence Gordon, Lord Peter Wimsey, Inspector MacPherson.
How do you do, my lord?
Be covered, Mr. Gordon. I fancy you may be asked to make a sworn statement.
What have you to tell us, Mr. Gordon?
Shall I start at the beginning? I'm a commercial traveller for the firm of Moss and Gordon, Glasgow. Ladies, dressers and hosiery. Here's my card. Yesterday my wife said to me, Clarence, there was a call come through on the wireless for travellers by the Begrenin Road to say if they saw a bicyclist last Tuesday. Did you hear it? I said to her, no, I'm travelling all the week and cannot always be listening to the wireless. Well, my wife tells me what it is, and I say, well, when I have time, I'll go to tell the police what I have seen. And here I am. It is very inconvenient and not good for business, but it is my duty as a citizen. I tell my firm, the boss is my brother, and he says, Clarence, you must tell the police, it cannot be helped. So I came here, and here I am with my story.
And what is your story, Mr. Gott?
Oh, yes, sir. I travel this district every Monday, spending the night at Newton Stewart and returning on Tuesday afternoon by the Bargrenin Road to Girvan and Ayr, where I have many good customers. Last Tuesday, I started from Newton Stewart in my limousine, as usual after an early lunch. I passed Bar Hill at a little after 12:30. I remember seeing the train go out of the station just before I got there. That is how I know the time. I had passed through the village when I saw a bicyclist in a grey suit riding very fast along the road in front of me. I say to myself, there is a man in a great hurry in the middle of the road. I must blow my horn loudly. He is wobbling from side to side, you understand, with his head down. I pass him and I see his face very white and with spectacles. Well, that is all. I do not see him again, and he is the only bicyclist I see on all that road till I get to Girvan.
The only one?
Yes.
But that...
He can't be our man, Inspector. The train leaves Bar Hill at 12:35. He couldn't possibly have ridden the 12 miles to Girvan in 32 minutes.
But where was our man, my lord? We know he arrived at Girvan station at 1:07. Therefore, Mr. Gordon here must have passed him.
No, only this one bicyclist.
And you say he had a grey suit and spectacles?
Yes.
Exactly the description of the man who took the bicycle to Ayr. It must have been our man, my lord.
But it couldn't be, don't you see? Even a trained bicyclist could hardly manage 24 miles an hour for 12 miles along that road. Not on the Anworth Hotel machine, anyhow. No, Inspector, I'm afraid we may have to rethink the whole Tuesday morning end of the business. The bicycle is just another red herring.
In that episode of The Five Red Herrings, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Sergeant D.L. John Graham, Sir Maxwell Jimerson, Garrard Green, Inspector MacPherson, Don MacKillop, Waters, Bill Wallace, Strachan, Gordon Clyde, Jock Graham, Christopher Schooler, and Clarence Gordon, Gordon Faith. Evidence of a Commercial Traveller was adapted by Chris Miller from the book The Five Red Herrings by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.